Well, I don't mean to piss you off with things I might say. So when I try to shut my mouth, well, they come out anyway. So when I speak my mind, that's when we connect. Yeah, but that's not politically correct.
Hello again, ladies and gentlemen. This is MMA Torch editor Jamie Pennick, and I am joined today by Torch columnist Jason Bent for a review of UFC 88 Breakthrough from Atlanta, Georgia, last night's pay-per-view. I gave my quick rundown of this on my daily audio last night. So, Jason, you want to give me an overview of the show and your match of the night?
Great show. I mean, going into it, the show obviously lacked the mainstream star power for the casual fan and even a lot of the UFC fans, but the undercard just was amazing. I give the undercard an A. Main event, I give an A++ for shock value. And, I mean, I give the entire show an emphatic thumbs up. Aside from Rashad Overchuck, I got to give, you know, match of the night. I thought Henderson versus Polaris was a really excellent tactical battle. And were it not for the amazing highlight reel knockout of Chuck, that would be my match of the night. So I kind of have 1 and 1A, Rashad Evans versus Chuck Liddell. And 1A is Dan Henderson versus Usmar Polaris and what I thought was the best match of the undercard.
And, you know, I'm going to agree with you on this one. I mean, there was, I've been hearing different comments from people that were down on this fight that thought it was kind of boring. And I'm just, the first two rounds were just absolutely stellar. I mean, the third round kind of slowed down a bit. It was a lot more tentative than the first two, but Henderson just had a great strategy coming in. And the fact that he was able to stuff almost every takedown attempt by Usmar Polaris was quite impressive. And he executed his game plan, and it was just a very, very good strategical tactical battle for the first two rounds. The third round, like I said, kind of brought it down a little bit, but not much, because the first two were just such great back and forth stuff. And once Polaris got it to the ground, you saw why Henderson didn't want to be there. So, I mean, that was just a great, great fight. You're absolutely right.
I mean, the thing is for Henderson, that Polaris is the wrong fighter to look good against. I mean, like they said before the fight, he's a dangerous guy with no name. So had he lost, you know, a majority of people would have said, oh, Henderson's done. Winning, they're saying, he didn't win impressively enough for us. But, I mean, he fought against a fire hydrant with a hell of a chin, landed shot after shot, you know, escaped that knee bar, especially the heel hook. I mean, Polaris on the ground could probably finish off quite a few guys in that division. So Henderson, I thought, fought the smart fight, tactical battle. In my opinion, he won, you know, a shutout on the entire fight, 30-27. And I think Henderson's back. I want to see him again. And it was the fight of the night for me.
Yeah. You know, this was a night of surprising performances. Starting with the first match of the night, Matt Brown was really impressive against Dong Young Kim and had an argument for winning this fight. I personally thought due to the takedowns and the cut opened up by Kim with the elbows at the end of round three, that he snuck it out razor thin, but I could have made the argument for Matt Brown to win that fight as well. So the split decision made sense to me. That first round was just highly unique with Kim kind of wrapped around Matt Brown and trying to take his back and trying to get some submission while kind of wrapped around him for that. Brown came back and had just a great second round. And then in the third round, it was another pretty even fight with Brown landing some good shots and being the aggressor for most of it, but he got taken down twice and got cut open with a couple of nasty elbows at the end of the round that I think cost it for him and eventually did for the judges. Your thoughts on this fight?
I thought it was an excellent fight to open the show. I mean, Matt Brown, the guy's got some amazing cardio. First time I've ever seen the stun gun. I mean, he's still undefeated. He won the first round going away. Brown easily took the second round, and just like you said, opening the cut, the two takedowns, I gave him the third. So I don't argue with the decision. I agree with it. I want to see Matt Brown again. I'd like to see stun gun again. And that first round was pretty impressive. I mean, I thought I was watching a replay of the movie Shudder. I mean, Matt Brown's walking around. Instead of an Asian girl on his shoulders, he's got an Asian guy. I mean, Kim hung off of him. And he was bearing the weight for the entire round, and he was not gassed. I want to see him again. I mean, he's not gassed. Matt Brown may not be immortal, but he's got some lungs. He's definitely got some lungs on.
Yeah. Another surprising outcome came in the next fight with Martin Kampman and Nate Marquardt. I had Marquardt winning. I thought Marquardt would win this fight. I thought it would last a lot longer than it did. I thought it would be a bit more even, but I thought Marquardt was going to come out to make a statement after dropping that decision, after losing a couple points to Talis Laitis at 85. So I wasn't surprised to see him come out, but just how dominating he was over the undefeated in the octagon, Martin Kampman, was highly impressive. And he's going to, he's another step towards getting himself another shot at Anderson Silva. That was a great fight by Nate Marquardt.
That was an amazing showing. I mean, only a minute and 22 seconds, and he absolutely destroyed Kampman. Head kick, body shots, short elbow, more body shots. I mean, he was just raining them down on him. It was like windmills against Don Quixote. It was something impressive. Going into it, I actually thought Kampman could pull this one out, but Marquardt was a buzzsaw. I mean, this was an announcement that, hey, I'm a hell of a fighter, 185. You know, let's bring on some more challenges. Again, for the casual fan tuning into the pay-per-view, they're going to want to see the guy again because he was just nothing but fists and fury.
Yeah. Well, he had Kampman shaken with the early head kick, and then he followed it up with those nasty knees to the face, and then just continued pouring on the shots. He was relentless on the cage until Kampman just kind of slumped down and it was done. So definitely great performance by Nate Marquardt. And it's clear when you see how dominant he is in this fight, how dominant Rich Franklin was in his fight later. It just goes to show how good Anderson Silva is. It's absolutely insane because he basically has been able to handle both Nate Marquardt and Rich Franklin. Obviously multiple occasions for Franklin in the past, but he's taking care of everyone's division. That's just how good he is when you've got fighters as good as Nate Marquardt and Rich Franklin unable to do anything against him.
Yeah, I'd love to see Marquardt against Silva now. I wouldn't mind seeing Franklin come back down. I mean, Nate Marquardt is a primetime guy. He's a marquee fighter. He doesn't have the marquee name, but I think after this fight, he's going to have a little bit of a buzz about him, and he's definitely on the short list at 185, and I really think he could go up to 205 and bang as well. But he's definitely going to be a fighter to watch. I liked him before, and I really like him now because it just looks like he's back. And a Nate Marquardt that's back is a deadly force in that division.
I'm definitely with you on that. Speaking of Rich Franklin, the big fight against Matt Hamill last night, Franklin back up to 205. I said this in my report and in my audio last night. You know, I honestly thought Hamill was going to do a lot better than he did in this fight. I thought he was, I mean, his striking has improved in each subsequent fight, but I thought he was going to try to use the takedown game more, and Franklin just picked him apart with leg kicks, with body kicks, with punches. Just Hamill had no chance in this fight. He just was unable to do anything, and we got the unique gut kick TKO, kick right to the liver to just send Hamill straight down to the ground. That was kind of nasty to see, too. It was reminiscent of Lesnar's knee to Heath Herring in the second or third round of their fight, where you could just see Herring buckle, but Herring was able to continue. But Hamill here just, he was just outclassed against a much better fighter.
Oh, yeah, and first, did you know that Harley-Davidson is still the only motorcycle worthy of being in the Octagon? Did you know that?
Have you heard of that? I'm not sure. I think I need to be reminded of that again.
I mean, Hamill looked like he didn't even belong on the card. That's how good Franklin looked. And he stuffed every single takedown attempt. I mean, there weren't many, but he stuffed them all. His strikes were precise. He had excellent movement. The liver shot was absolutely devastating. But I think the leg kicks are what established him and led to winning this fight easily. Hamill showed much, you know, improved striking, like you said, opened up a cut. It was a pretty nasty-looking cut. Franklin looked great. Hamill is definitely not an elite 205-er, and really, if it weren't for the tough rub, he wouldn't belong in a co-main event anyway. Franklin's solid, poses a threat in the division, and, you know, after this, I wouldn't mind seeing Rich Franklin versus Rashad Evans. I wouldn't mind seeing that fight.
That would not be a bad idea. That cut was sick, too, by the way. That was just, that was kind of disgusting to see, especially as he's sitting there doing the interview and Joe Rogan standing 3 inches away from it. It just cut open, big chunk out of your eye. That's disturbing. Anyway, more undercard action. Tim Boach against Michael Pat. Boach returning with another big TKO and a welcome to the UFC, Michael Pat. Boach was dominant here, much like his undercard fight at UFC 81. And it was a different Boach than we saw against Hamill. So Boach gets a win back and tries to start back up the ladder. Definitely at the bottom of the light heavyweight ladder, but Boach has got something there. He's a lot of explosiveness. He's got a lot of power. And for all the talk of his striking, him not being well-versed in the striking game, he's certainly showing an aptitude towards it.
Yeah, I mean, he looked like a striker to me, but, I mean, that performance would make, you know, you'd call anybody a striker. I mean, the huge right-hand shot, and he was just all over him. You know, Dean stopped it. Nobody in the world could disagree. You know, Pat was wanting to get back up and fight, but, you know, that's the mindset, unless you're knocked out cold. You know, he was not going to be able to overcome that onslaught. I would not mind seeing Boach against Hamill again. I mean, Tim Boach definitely gave a great showing. He showed much improved striking. I'd like to see him again. I don't necessarily think he could be a force at 205 right now, but I think he's a raw talent. He definitely has just raw talent that can be refined, and he could be a more than serviceable fighter.
Definitely. Before I get to the main event, we got our the prelim fight that aired following that. Jason McDonald taking this fight on short notice after fighting just last month at UFC 87, taking on Jason Lambert here. I actually predicted this one on the button, submission victory, second round for Jason McDonald, so I was happy to see that. But this was a really good fight. I thought this was a really, really, really good fight. Lambert almost had it finished in the first round. Some great groundwork in the first round. Some good punching exchanges in both rounds. McDonald was really good from the top, doing a lot of damage with body shots and shots to the face, but then almost got caught in the guillotine at the end of the first round. And then just beautiful work on the ground in the second round to get the full mount. When Lambert gave up his back, McDonald slapped on that body triangle and then snapped that rear naked choke in. That was beautiful rear naked choke for the victory. Great fight for McDonald to get a win back after the loss to Demian Maia.
Yeah, I mean, Lambert McDonald was definitely worthy of being shown. I was excited to see another fight. He got the submission of the night. It was an excellent rear naked choke with a pretty nice body triangle, very precise and efficient on the ground. McDonald pretty much looked like Mark Lehman giving you the how-to on one of the old UFC DVDs with that finishing sequence there. Lambert's mistakes were his doing in this fight, because McDonald was able to hold on for the last 6 seconds of the first round when, lesser men would have been gone and tapped, and he was able to go out for the second round with a clear head and finish him off and just look like a dominant fighter. I really thought Lambert was going to pull this off before the fight, but pleasantly surprised with McDonald's victory and his performance, and glad to see the fight.
And that brings us to our main event. Definitely one of the most shocking knockouts we've seen in UFC history, plain and simple. The first round was really tentative. Rashad was trying to dance around and avoid a lot. Chuck was trying to pick spots and trying to counter. I thought Rashad did enough with some nice punches and a couple of hard body kicks to win that very tentative round. There wasn't much to it, obviously. Second round was a completely different story. Both of them out with a fury right off the bat. Chuck just kind of chasing Rashad down, and they both went for that knockout punch, and Rashad connected. That was just a beautiful overhand right hook. That such a great punch, and Chuck was out cold. I'm sitting here, it's 11:22 a.m. Central Standard Time, Sunday morning. I'm so in shock on that knockout. I can't believe that it happened like that, and that Chuck Liddell knocked out cold. That's something that's hard to wrap your mind around, isn't it, Jason?
Yeah, if you would have told me this 1 day ago, 1 week ago, a few months ago, I wouldn't have believed you, and I would have taken your bet. I mean, he was out cold. Chuck today is probably as discombobulated as he was when he took too much sleep and medication for that cold a while back on Good Morning Texas. I mean, he was iced, laid out there. And going into the fight, looking at him, his midsection didn't look like the usual beer belly. He looked to be in better shape. He was focused. But Evans looked relaxed, and that knockout and Chuck missing the uppercut, I mean, it called to mind like Apollo and Rocky in the gym hitting each other at the same time. It was that close.
Yeah, it that was crazy. So that brings us to the title picture in the light heavyweight division. I mean, we're in an interesting spot where we've got Rashad Evans up at the top. Lyoto Machida is up there for deserving a title fight. And Forrest Griffin is without a challenger right now. Where do you think we're at in the light heavyweight division, and who gets that next title shot?
I don't think the knockout proves by any means that Evans is an elite striker, but it certainly makes the case for him being possibly an elite fighter. I mean, thing is, with that shot on the point of the chin, any fighter would be just knocked out cold by it. It's more bittersweet for Liddell than it's going to be sweet for Sugar Rashad Evans. I don't think Machida deserves the title shot, but I really think they may go the tough route and, you know, have Evans face him, but that's just not considered such a marketable marquee matchup, because there's a lot of people that just strongly dislike Rashad. Now, enough people love Forrest that they'd want to see, you know, Forrest take out Rashad, sure, but I don't know if I would give him the title shot just for beating Liddell. If you go by that logic, you know, Keith Jardine should have got in there. So 205 division's a little clogged right now. I'd probably want to go with Evans and Franklin, and if Lyoto can get the title shot, please give it to him. He's more than deserved it with his ability and his unblemished record. That's the fight I'd like to see, but I think they'll probably go the route of Evans versus Griffin.
You know, and I agree with you that Lyoto deserves that fight, that he's done nothing but win fights. And he should be next in line for that shot. It's unfortunate that that fight with Thiago Silva coming up, that's not happening anymore because Silva's injury was supposed to show the clear number one contender. It really would have with this Rashad victory. But Lyoto's done nothing but win. It hasn't been the most exciting for some people, and he's not the most popular fighter. It's not a gigantic marquee selling matchup for Forrest Griffin. But that's the problem with the light heavyweight division right now, is all of the big, big stars of the division, well, you got one as the champion, one just got knocked out cold, the other is facing legal battles and is messed up in the head for sure. I'm going to go off on a tangent here, but I know you agree with me that Rampage should not be talked about for another fight this year. I'm in shock, especially with, I don't know if you've seen the 30-minute interview that he did on California television, but it's very clear that the man should not be fighting anytime soon with all this legal stuff going on right now. So the star matches for the light heavyweight division just aren't there. They're just deep with great fighters, but they don't have the star power of some other divisions.
That's exactly true. I did see the Rampage interview, and if his head was out of sorts after the defeat, after he lost to Forrest, how in the hell can he get through training camp and actually focus on an opponent with all these legal issues over his head and everything else? And yet they, you know, show him in the crowd last night. You know, he's kind of mugging for the camera a little bit. And I've even heard the rumors as far as Wanderlei Silva against Rampage in November. And I say, no way. Rampage does not belong on a card anywhere for a while, does not belong in a cage. He needs to get his life straightened out and his head completely clear. As for the 205 division, full of great fighters, lacking stars, like you say. I mean, they're going to have to make the stars by putting these guys up there in co-main events and showing all the casual fans and the casual UFC fans that, hey, these guys really are star fighters. You just, their names are not household names yet. The division is deep. There's plenty of great fights to be had, but there are very few, if any, pay-per-view selling one fight, you know, kind of mashups.
Speaking of pay-per-view selling matchups, we've got to look forward to next month, or in 2 months, the biggest fight in the history of MMA. I'm calling it right now. It will be the highest grossing fight in the history of MMA. It will be one of the most important fights for the where UFC is going as in terms of mainstream coverage. Brock Lesnar, Randy Couture. Absolutely huge. I can't wait to see this fight. I know we've still got two shows to look forward to. You talked about this in this week's column. Not to look past the good stuff on those, but I know we all cannot wait to get to that Chuck Liddell-Randy Couture fight. What are your thoughts on this, and what do you think is going to happen when those two get in the octagon together?
This fight is bigger than big, and they could have this fight alone. For the pay-per-view, everybody would gladly pay, and it would do numbers that make UFC Vendetta look like just a redheaded stepchild. I mean, Vendetta was the fight that really started the ascent. Shamrock Ortiz did boffo at the box office, and now you have a marquee matchup that just we're all salivating for. Brock against Randy. I love Randy. He's Captain America. But I really feel like he's being put to the wolves in this fight. I think Brock Lesnar is the real deal. He's just a raw machine, but, I mean, he's going to be about 280 pounds come fight time. And, you know, Randy's a world-class wrestler, but so's Brock. And there's a big difference between, you know, having an extra 50, 60 pounds laying on top of you, you know, raining down hammer fists. I don't think any of us are going to be let down by the fight. You know, Joe Rogan messed up the date last night and called it the 19th and then said, you know, what the hell, watch the fight another 4 days. That's exactly right. That is exactly right. You're going to want to watch this fight again and again. I don't see how this fight is going to be a letdown because it's huge either way. If Randy does it, Randy's back. Oh, my God. If Brock does it, whoa, this guy is for real. I don't think anybody is going to be let down, and I think this is going to be the biggest fight ever. It's just huger than huge. It's big. It's everything. It's, you know, everything a Liddell versus Ortiz was times about 10 to maybe the 10th power. This is a Super Bowl matchup that's going to have everybody buzzing for the next 2 months and probably for another 6 months at least after it's done with.
Well, and the heat's going to be crazy in Las Vegas because you just know that it's going to be complete and utter superstar hero-type celebration and pop for Randy Couture and just absolute villainy for Brock Lesnar. He's going to just be booed mercilessly in that fight, and he's fine with that. You've got a straight pro wrestling style heel versus face matchup. This is just, it's classic for this, and I can't wait to see this. And you know, I'm with you on, I don't want to say Randy Couture is going to lose. I don't want to say Brock Lesnar is going to win. Randy's shown it time and again that he's able to pull these victories off. He's able to beat bigger guys. Yeah, he beat Tim Sylvia. He beat Gabriel Gonzaga, who's got a lot of weight on him. He has not fought anyone like Brock Lesnar because there is no one like Brock Lesnar. And it's going to be, as you said, it doesn't matter what happens. It's a good outcome either way for the fans, for the UFC, for either fighter. Because even with a loss, Brock Lesnar's not going to lose much. It's his fourth MMA fight. He's facing frickin' Randy Couture. If he loses to Randy Couture, he lost to Randy Couture. There's nothing to be ashamed of there. And if he wins, wow. If he beats Randy Couture, I see no reason he can't beat anyone else in the heavyweight division. In the UFC for sure. And hell, we've been talking about Randy Fedor. If Brock beats Randy Couture and picks up a few more wins in the heavyweight division, if Affliction does fold and they have a chance to get Fedor, Brock Lesnar could be huge in a year and a half.
Yeah, it could be just a huge fight. Like, this is a can't lose proposition for really just the UFC, its fans, Brock Lesnar, of course, and even for Randy, because, you know, if he loses to Brock, you can kind of say, he's a little rusty. Maybe age has caught up to him. He's never fought anybody like Brock. Where do we go from here? If Brock wins, he's destroyed Captain America. You know, he's just the villain, just a machine who goes over people. Brock versus Fedor down the line would be an amazing fight. And you know what? Even with a loss, I could still see Couture versus Fedor. I could still see that fight because Randy could lose five fights in a row. And unlike Ken Shamrock, in the next fight, there'd be people picking Randy to win because he's shown us he can do such a thing. I mean, not after that many losses in a row, but just subjectively, you know, when Randy loses, it doesn't mean he's done. I mean, UFC has just put down the gauntlet. And right now there are Affliction t-shirts just being burned and there's tears because when Dana White and the Fertitta brothers have someone in their sights, they want to hurt you. I mean, Elite XC is lucky that the UFC has not decided to focus any energy on them. I mean,
yeah.
Affliction did it with, you know, they had banned, you know, a payroll that just looked amazing. I mean, it just looked like what Mother Teresa raised for charities. And now Dana's like, okay, I'm going to cut you off, or I'm going to at least try to. And if it folds, Fedor can come into the fold. UFC suddenly has a very skilled heavyweight division along with a very, very marketable one. And marquee heavyweights do marquee buys, and it's a great way to sell the product, and UFC is going to continue to get bigger. I mean, look, there's so much we're talking about, so many good things that can happen. Nothing bad can come of this pay-per-view fight. Nothing bad at all.
And we got a bunch of good stuff on tap before that, too. I mean, we've got Fight Night coming up on September 17th. We've got The Ultimate Fighter starting up, I believe, this week or the following week. We got Michael Bisping, Chris Lieben, live on Spike TV for UFC 89. That should be a good fight. Anderson Silva back in action at UFC 90. I mean, we got a ton of action for UFC coming up on tap before we get to that fight. And you made the comment, marquee heavyweight matchups make marquee fights, make the pay-per-views. Affliction's going to be in a world of hurt if Andre Arlovsky does not beat Josh Barnett on October 11th. Yes. Because Fedor Barnett does not have the luster that Fedor Arlovsky will for the mainstream fan. So they're going to be in a lot of danger for some of their matchups with the amount of money they're paying people. They're in a dangerous spot losing Randy Couture back to the UFC here, and I'm very interested to see if they're able to stay in business with this and if they're able to continue burning money at the rate they are.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. We have so much to look forward to in the short term that, you know, it's hard not to look at the long term. I mean, looking beyond, you've got Randy and Brock. You've got Forrest defending the title in December. At least right now, that's kind of where they're going. You've got Penn and St. Pierre in January. But before then, Bisping Lieben, and it's free on Spike TV. That's a really good fight. Both guys have a legitimate shot at winning this fight. And it's going to be a solid fight. And then you get to see Anderson Silva, the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world, getting to fight again. I mean, we get Anderson Silva, and then we're going to get Randy and Brock. You know, if Affliction isn't here in the footsteps, they're going to feel the tap on the back shortly enough. I mean, Affliction is kind of like a teenage girl running around Crystal Lake, and Jason Voorhees is stalking. He's talking. Dana's got the hockey mask on. He's looking for you. And we've got an excellent, excellent lineup of fights before us that, I hate to say it, arguably in the last few years, I can't remember a run like this. I really can't. Or at least a perceived run. We don't know till we're there, but it just looks like a murderer's row of fights for the UFC.
It really does. And then also under their banner, we got WEC action. That we were supposed to have this Wednesday, delayed till November because of the hurricane coming up this week in Florida. But Uriah Faber's back in action, and he is one of the most fun fighters to watch as well. So you got just great action for Zuffa Inc. and great stuff going forward.
I love to watch Faber fight. I'd like to see Faber go up against Pulver again. I thought they had an amazing fight. I want to see it again. It's a shame the hurricane, you know, knocked out the fight card. You know, I'm just glad everyone's okay. Beyond that, I mean, it's not as big a deal moving the fight card as it is, you know, a possible hurricane coming through. We still get the card. We get to watch Uriah Faber. Like you said, Zuffa has thrown everything out in front of us. I mean, when you're at a point that Uriah Faber becomes the afterthought to everything else, things are pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Jason, thank you for joining me again on another MMA Torch Audio, and we'll have you on again sometime soon. And thank you all for listening. This is Jamie Penick signing off.